Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I am your host, Mary Catherine Hamm. I am here with my co-host, Vic Mattis, of the Washington Free Beacon. We are your morning show for any hour, and we have a packed show today. We have news about Trump in New York. We have a lot of news that's hurting my brain from the Hill. We have a John Fetterman. You love to hear it. I think we're just going to rename that award the John Fetterman You Love to Hear It Award. Caitlin Clark drafted, and there's a big old discussion about that. And the Cass review, which I promised to get to. A lot on our plates. But before that, we should see how Vic's doing.
Hello, Mary Catherine. Doing fine. I had some observations I forgot to make on the last show about my trip. And the last couple trips, I've been flying more than I like to. I don't enjoy flying anymore. But when we were going down, this is interesting. When we were going down to Charleston, we were sort of in a rush. We get in the airport line, right? And they go through the security. You got to go through the scanners. Suddenly, they're telling us, leave the laptop in the case,
right.
Go through, leave your shoes on. You don't have to take off your belt.
Yes.
What is happening here? And then when we were coming back, going in the other direction, everything off again. Shoes off, belt off, laptop outside the case. What's going on? Yeah. And can't we, it was like, I told the kids, it was like a brief glimpse into the year 2000, where
yeah.
you kept everything on. Have you experienced this when you're traveling where they tell you to keep everything on and nothing goes off?
Yes. Did they have a different carousel of how you put the stuff through the
Possibly.
Scanner?
You're thinking that it's
Those two seem linked. So I don't know why they're linked,
but that
seems to be a system. Now, do I like that scanner system either? No. No, I do not. Partly because I feel like they bark at you about how you're not supposed to do the thing you've been told for 20 years to do.
Yes.
And then they gaslight you about like why you're yeah. having a question mark on your face.
It's 20 years and now they're telling you, you know, just go.
And then there's also
that's interesting.
On that kind,
uh-huh.
which it's hard to explain. It's very like Rube Goldberg mm-hmm. situation for something that should be simple.
Mm-hmm.
They've got like two, it looks like a crayon factory that you would visit on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Like there's just a lot going on. Like there's
right.
so many conveyor belts
yeah.
of buckets.
Yes.
And
yes.
you they feed automatically up to you and then they're pushed along.
Yeah. And there's also the alternating rollers and conveyor belt and then rollers again.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's very confusing. Well, okay, medium confusing. It's medium. Let's not underestimate
me, guys. It depends what time of the day. Early morning, it's very confusing.
But there's a lot going on and I got barked at recently because I just went to the wrong slot for what, I don't know, remember what it was, but I was like, you need to go there. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to know I'm going to go there? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I was intrigued by it, but it was only
yeah.
one instance of where I had that happen where you could just walk in normally. And that was kind
yeah.
of exciting.
It is
and
nice.
Nothing went off. And I did want to mention, so, you know, Indiana folks who are very friendly. And when we were at the South Bend Airport,
right.
which is not quite LaGuardia, slightly
right.
smaller. There was a ticketing agent. His name is Niles, I think with an N. The friendliest person that I have ever interacted with at an airport ever. And he's talking to the folks at the gate, you know, leave your bags, explaining why you got to, you know, because the plane's small. I'll put the tags on. Don't worry. You'll pick it up on the jetway. And then as you're walking into the plane, he scans it and he says, you know, Mary Catherine, have a safe flight.
Oh,
you know, and all these different people by name. And I'm looking at my boarding pass and it's Victorine All with an L, which is my middle initial.
Okay.
And I'm like, Victorine All. And I'm like, he sees it. I just go, Vic is fine.
Yeah.
He goes, okay, my man, Victor, have a good flight. So a nice shout out.
By the way, the TSA will tell you, or people, apologists for the TSA, will tell you that they're switching it up because they're so clever and they're throwing off the terrorists, okay? The TSA has never thrown off a terrorist. Like, that's,
yeah.
they're not catching people, guys.
Yeah.
But I will shout out to the TSA in different parts of the country
yes.
where you will have a very different experience. That is that is a rural versus metropolitan or coastal versus middle America divide where you go to like a South Dakota small
yeah.
airport and they're
yeah.
like, hey, how's it going?
No,
it's super nice. Now, I know that at DCA or Dulles, they have a lot more people coming through. I get that. But the tone is very different.
It's friend. I love small airports. Bangor, Maine has a wonderfully small airport as well. Mary Catherine, how are you?
I'm all right. I would like to tell a story about how I went out last night on the town, Vic. On the town.
On a school night, no
I did. Less. I did. And I didn't leave the house until 7 o'clock.
That's
wow.
That's crazy.
Wow. It's like, remember, I don't know if you were like this, but remember when I was in college, it was like, you'd be pre-gaming at the house at 10:30, and then like
at 10:30 p.m. Right, you want to show up fashionably.
11
late
to
a
midnight,
party.
You're going out. This is the 40s version of that.
Okay, 7.
I left the house at 7 on a weeknight. So I went to Jennifer Say, who is an author, former Levi's executive.
Oh, right.
During the cancel culture of 2020, or after that, but as a result of the cancel culture of 2020. Was ousted from her position, essentially, at Levi's, very high up, because she had been an open schools advocate.
Wow.
In San Francisco. Now, we all know, of course, now that she was exactly correct.
Yeah.
And she was actually serving all the underserved people that the other folks who wanted to oust her claimed to care about very much. Well, she's moved on with her life. She's written a book that I interviewed her on.
She was a Getting Hammered
host.
Show. Yeah.
And she's launched a athletic wear line called XXXY because
wow.
It's for actual women.
Wow. Good
so,
for her.
Yes. So there was a little gathering about that. And as a result, look, I was at the house. Had I forgotten about this event until the day of? Yes. And I went to the gym and then I helped put the babies to bed. Mm-hmm. And did things that needed to be done on the home front. And then I thought, you know what? I could make it to this reception, but only if I don't get ready.
How so? What do you mean?
Which means, I know, you're a man. So you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Right.
I had on leggings, a tank top, and zero makeup. And I said, you know what? I want to go. And I feel like Jen Say is not going to care if I walk in gym clothes to an athletic wear event. However, it was at Cafe Milano, so I put on a coat, so it kind of looked like
fancy.
I was like hiding a better outfit.
Yeah. That's where the fancy go.
Oh, that's the movers
place.
And shakers.
Yeah.
So I moved and shaked my ass up to Georgetown in my leggings and went to this event. And yes, it turns out because she's a cool chick, I was well received in my gym bum clothes, and I got to hang out with her in person for the first time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Was there any swag?
Not at this event, but I am receiving some.
Right.
So
does she do jeans as well? Because I'm curious. I imagine she's not wearing.
No,
knees,
we're just doing gym wear. Because she also was a world class gymnast in her teen years, and so she has quite a rich history with athletic wear.
That's
and
great.
I'm excited to receive any
Wonderful.
Of this. Anyway, so that was my adventure, and I do feel like, look, I don't know if it's a sign of dysfunction or a feather in my cap that I can go to a DC event at Cafe Milano. With my gym clothes and no makeup, but I'm going to count it as a win.
Definitely. Did you stay out till like 2 a.m.?
Oh, please. I did not have a sip of alcohol, and I went home by 8:30.
You made an appearance. That's all.
No, not by 8:30. I probably got home around a little after 9. So, you know what? That's a late
that
night
is, no, yeah,
for
it's,
mom.
It's a school night. That's a big deal.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's what I was up to.
Wonderful.
Excited for that and excited to get my swag, which
swag.
Maybe you will see on the
yes.
show, because I do
yeah,
like to
sure.
wear my gym clothes to the show as well. Okay. Shall we talk about SCOTUS arguments?
Oh, let's do it.
I do like to get into these just because, as I always say about the Supreme Court, it is helpful to both read and listen to them.
Yes.
The arguments are interesting. They are clear thinkers and clear speakers. And even when I disagree with them, I sort of enjoy listening to the back and forth. So this is what is in court this year. For many in shorthand, they call it the January 6th argument. It is on behalf of a man named Joseph Fisher,
right,
who stands accused of several crimes on the day of January 6th. But one of them is under the Sarbanes-Oxley
yes.
Act of 2002. And basically, this is being used for about 350 people.
Yeah.
Who were at the Capitol on January 6th. And the question is whether this is an appropriate use
right.
of this statute on these people.
Yeah.
And whether it might, yes, for all the people out there who are like, but the January 6thers should be punished. Sure. The question is always, is the government using a statute in such a way that it is opening it up not only to violating these folks' rights, who may
right.
be guilty of other things but not this statute, and would it spill over into really protected speech and making that a problem for people and chilling it. Okay, so
it's a slippery slope.
Slippery slope. So it's the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. That is the post-Enron accounting stuff.
Yes.
Shorthand for that, I guess. And there's two parts of the section. One, it says basically that you can't corruptly alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal a record, document, or other object, or attempt to do so with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second section says this would apply to anyone who otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. Okay, they're both felonies. Section one, for physical evidence.
Yeah.
Section two appears after the word otherwise to apply to proceedings.
Yeah.
The government says that's carte blanche for any official proceeding for us to go after these people. Fisher and his lawyers say, no, hold on. The Supreme Court has ruled that otherwise, when they use that phrasing, means that the following language applies to what came before.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying it's not applicable because this is not an evidentiary situation. There's not an object that he's obstructing. So that's the basic argument. I hope that wasn't too clumsy an explanation.
No, that was good.
Okay. And it makes sense to me as a layperson that the court would have to rule what the word otherwise means.
Right.
And the way that we limit statutes is to say that this word otherwise applies to the thing that came before it, which is a very specific thing about evidence.
Right.
So much of the reporting has said that the justices were very much on the side of Fisher, skeptical of the government's argument. I actually listened to the oral arguments and didn't find it to be as stark that they were in disagreement with the government. Obviously, the liberal justices were more friendly to it, but they got to this issue of, does this obstruct, would this mean that you could be in trouble for peaceful protest?
Yeah, that's right.
Or for just like sort of basic interruptions of an official proceeding. For instance, they argued, if there was a heckler here right now and we had to stop for 5 minutes, would that person be subject to felony prosecution?
Right. Or a protesting outside of court.
Right.
You know, trying to, and having that being interpreted as swaying a jury.
Right.
These people, if the prosecution wins and their argument holds regarding the key word otherwise and that Sarbanes-Oxley, or as I like to call it, Sarbanes, since Paul Sarbanes, he was Greek. He was, I think his family's from Laconia. But,
very nice. Sarbanes-Oxley,
that it applies to this sort of obstruction, right?
Right.
When, as you mentioned, this had to do with the Enron case what they call evidence spoliation, right? The shredding.
Right.
And somehow we got from that to January 6th.
It does seem quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if they do that, again, was Fisher also acting corruptly, you know, because he claims, of course, he was pushed into the crowd.
Right, right.
He's no angel. I mean, his social media does not help him, in his case.
No, and so he stands accused of several other things. Yeah. One of the justices' questions was like, is it possible that we're piling on charges here because this is a felony with a 20 years punishment when he could just, there's plenty of other tools with which to go after this behavior.
Sure, and a disorderly conduct without question, right? But we are talking about the potential for a lot of these people and in the moving forward, getting a 20-year sentence for being under the rubric of Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I will say this, Trump weighing in on the case probably doesn't help them, calling them martyrs.
Right.
They're still alive, so they haven't been, put in the boiling oil yet or stoned. So that doesn't help. But on the other hand, you also have the Democrats who are, wanting this to happen. Right.
Yeah.
And the folks on the left that they want this sort of full on prosecution using Sarbanes-Oxley. That's their priority to get, every person from January 6th gets, the maximum. And a lot of them are getting very, heavy sentences, as we know this. On the other hand, they don't seem to care as much about, the Free Beacon, for example, reported on a story yesterday. There is a new Biden judicial nominee, Brian Murphy, for a district court in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of a prison reform group in Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren is pushing for him and saying he's a great, he'll be a great judge at that level. He was part of a prison reform group that pushed to release a rapist who went on to rape again.
Wow.
But, that's okay.
No, I mean,
so it's...
So the other thing is, I saw one part where the government's lawyer was asked about, I believe it was Clarence Thomas asked, well, there's a lot of other violent disruptions of official proceedings, certainly since 2020. Oh. Has the government used this to go after any of those other ones? And she said, she had to admit, no, there it has been used for other things other than this specific Enron purpose, but it has not been used in those instances. Yeah. But she was like, well, I can't think of any other than this one.
Staring, which, looking right at Brett Kavanaugh, by
isn't
the way.
That sort of the problem, right? Yeah. That this federal prosecutor can't think of any other situation in which you could apply this statute to violent interruption.
Yeah.
Or at least very disruptive
interruption
of official proceedings when we've seen it all over the place. The one that always comes to mind for me, and it's not to say they are exact analogs, I'm just saying that this happens a lot on the left, was the occupation of the Wisconsin State House.
Oh, yeah.
When,
absolutely.
When the governor wanted to pass pension reform.
Right.
Right? Like, that was intended to disrupt the institution's vote to stop that from happening.
And that was celebrated.
Like, yes.
And there was graffiti and
she's
litter.
Like,
was
she's like, I can't really think of any. And it's because, unfortunately, from the government's perspective, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And this was not. And you have to have equal application of the law, not this ideological prism. So that concerned me a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say even, you know, the confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Got constantly interrupted and he could have been like, I'm right here. You know, I remember. And they didn't. And rightly so that shouldn't be charged as that.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, and disrupting is one thing. But I think it's a stretch to throw that under our SAR boxes.
Roberts, who's like, I guess, sort of seen as a bit of a swing vote at this point, preferred the more narrow reading of the law and seemed to side that way. Kagan was maybe the most vocal person on behalf of the government's position.
Interesting.
Joined by Jackson and Sotomayor.
Sure.
Gorsuch asked, would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify?
Yes.
Would a heckler in today's audience qualify or a heckler at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison? This, of course, seems like an allusion to Jamal Bowman, who's a Democratic senator who or Democratic representative who was censured for pulling the fire alarm in the Capitol. He says it was an accident. It was pretty clearly calculated.
Look at the tape.
Disrupt an official proceeding. You know, not felony charges for that guy. And the government's prosecutor again just says like, no, that's different.
I can't think of any other instance except for this.
So, and you know, people will argue like, oh, these justices who are arguing for the limited version of this are just big fans of insurrection. It's like, no, like, as I said, angels and non-angels in our system get the same equal protection of the law and should get equal consideration. And if he is guilty of other offenses, as he is charged with, we can talk about those and those can go through the system. But as with many things in the post-norm society that many of our norm-loving pundits bemoan, they seem to be busting a lot of norms to try to deal with the busting of norms. And I don't think that that's the correct approach. This could go either way.
Yeah.
Even though, like I said, the experts are saying it sounded very much like they were on the other side. I think when the prosecutor got to conceding that, yes, some peaceful protest might be swept into this, that's where you lose me. That's where Citizens United, by the way, which is the big famous campaign finance dark money case that the left hates so much.
They're so good at it, too.
I know, right? The government's lawyer at one point just told the Supreme Court in oral arguments, yes, under this statute, you could ban a book during election, ban the publishing of a book. So I have always asked my liberal friends, how do you deal with that problem? So that's a similar thing that we're looking at here. How do you deal with that slippery slope thing? So anyway, Fisher is before the Supreme Court, and we will find out more in the future. But as always, you can listen to oral arguments. You can read the decisions. Yeah. They are interesting if you take some time. I listened while folding laundry this morning. So thanks to the justices for that entertainment. But obviously listen to Getting Hammered first and then.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
We break it down. Right? It's really digestible here on the show.
Should we do a little bit of the cast review, which I promised last?
That's right.
And we're going to get to Hill News because there's a lot. But I do want to hit this because all over the world on gender-affirming care, which is the term for giving or even socially transitioning children, for giving them hormone treatment and then surgical treatment, particularly with minors, this is controversial.
Yeah, that's really what we're talking
about. That's what we're talking about. And much of the rest of the world is making a turn on this.
Yeah, they're pumping the brakes.
Scandinavia is like, oh, we were really, they were the pioneers on this.
Right.
And have said, oh, maybe not. Now in the UK, there's a renowned pediatrician, Hilary Cass, who did a meta-analysis mm-hmm. of all the studies on transitioning minors. Now, one of the problems with this is that the NHS, in its capacity and its famous gender clinic,
that's right, the National Health Service,
did not do a good job of keeping data,
mm-hmm.
did not do a good job of tracking minors who went through this process. However, there are a fair number of studies, and while not a lot of them were super high quality in that range, mm-hmm. there were a lot that were medium. So some of the critics have said they threw out all the studies. They didn't. They used medium and high quality and synthesized those.
There was a lot of pushback in attacking that Cass report and Cass herself.
Yes. So I'm going to read a little bit from The Guardian. Cass is a renowned pediatrician, and her painstakingly thorough review was 4 years in the making. She sets out how the now-closed NHS specialist gender clinic for children abandoned evidence-based medicine for a wing and a prayer. Significant numbers of gender-questioning children, it's impossible to know exactly how many because the clinic did not keep records, itself a scandal, were put on an unevidenced medical pathway of puberty-blocking drugs and or cross-sex hormones despite risks of harm in relation to brain development, fertility, bone density, mental health, and adult sexual functioning. Now, part of what happened here, in my reading of it, is that it was all circular reasoning. Someone decided this was the right path, and even without the evidence, the sort of politicized professional organizations said, yes, indeed, that is the right path, even though we don't have the evidence for it. Please stop talking about wanting evidence for it. That makes you a bigot.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody shut their mouths because you could get in trouble. And then the science referenced the professional organizations, and the professional organizations referenced the science, and there was no actual finding in this process.
Yeah, everyone was like, you're good, we're good. Okay, we're all good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except for the children, who maybe aren't as good.
I forgot about them.
Yes.
We ran a book review not long ago it was a book about the Tavistock Clinic in England. And look that up and look up Tavistock because you'll see, I mean, they had to shut that down because similarly, there were a lot of problems and they realized that there were not, the safety and the security of the kids was not exactly at the top of the list here.
Right.
And they tell some crazy stories about how a number of parents were sending their kids there because they said they didn't want their kids to grow up gay. So you can just switch them and switch their genders. Again, just look up Tavistock. That's the first thing. The second thing is, again, you start noticing, you know, the UK and much of Europe, who we love to look up to in other ways because they're so ahead of us, you know, with the bicycles and the climate stuff and whatever else, until it comes to like vaccines for kids and then the trans-affirming care, as you were talking about. We're beginning to notice it in this country. People are beginning to talk about it. And I think Bill Maher has noticed this and other people. I hate to use him as an example because he's not really so much on the left. He's really, you know, I mean, he's become really aware that these people are crazy. My question is, they see that this is happening in Europe. They're saying, you know, again, pumping the brakes, hold on, giving these puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and everything else and socially might not be a great thing. And yet we are going headlong. And like we're going all in, if I can throw in as many metaphors as possible, into making sure these kids, some of them are preteens, get, you know, if they feel that way, we're gonna do this for them. And if parents, you know, don't want it, we can separate from them from the parents. You know, like in California, they talk about this, and you can come here and we'll do this for you. Why are we still going forward if we see this?
As you may have noticed during COVID, we have some trouble course correcting.
Yeah,
and I think this is a similar thing. The circular reasoning reminded me very much of the pediatricians societies and doctor societies just saying, oh, no, screens are good for your kids now for many hours per day. And also, they don't need to see mouths to develop properly or speak properly. That was done in service of an ideological goal or a thing that they wanted to impose on people, even if they thought it was for the right reason. It wasn't science. But then again, the professional organizations politicized and reaching an ideological goal or a practical goal of what they want you to force you to do, then references the science. The science references this. There's no actual science happening in the middle or very little. So I think we have trouble dismounting from these situations in this country. Cass's vision, as it's written up here, is it's going to sound eminently sensible to a lot of people. Her vision is that gender-questioning children should be treated with the same level of care as everyone else, not as little projects for activists seeking validation for their own adult identities and belief systems, but that it's going to be, like, basically that you would, there would be holistic, multidisciplinary services grounded in mental health that assess the root causes of the questioning and take a therapeutic first approach. Puberty blockers would then only be prescribed as part of an NHS research trial, and she recommends extreme caution in relation to cross-sex hormones for 16 to 18-year-olds. One might expect this to be contingent on it being possible to develop diagnostic criteria for gender dysphoria that will last into adulthood. One of the controversies is they find that in many observations that it resolves on its own. So right. You don't necessarily want to do this huge medical intervention. But, you know, there are people for whom it doesn't, right?
Right.
I think that's a real thing.
But that percentage, the actual percentage?
Is very low. So determining who's who is very tough. So that's what she's addressing. And she's gone to, like, very rigorous attempts to do that. But it's being very attacked unfairly. But
I mean, you look at some studies in schools in certain states, and they'll tell you the increase, for example, in the state of New Jersey, the number of students, particularly girls, who are now, you know, declaring that they are either non-binary or they're of a different gender, is through the roof. It's like more than 200%. It's the increase is staggering.
Right.
And it can't be because they are all actually of this actual, in this actual situation.
Well, and often, again, I follow Jesse Singal on this, Jesse, S-I-N-G-A-L, who is really straight with the facts on this stuff and is very sophisticated in the way that he reads studies. And it is notable that often these studies are released and then they will have a whole publicity rollout, not Cass, but the ones that are more pro.
Yeah.
They'll have a whole publicity rollout claiming, haha, look what we found in this study. Now it's probably a low quality observational study, not controlling for any other factors. And they say, look at the improvement that cross-sex hormones and all this gender affirming treatment gave these young people. Singal will look deeper at the numbers and go, this shows no improvement.
Yeah.
They're just asserting that it does without the data supporting it. So just watch out for that kind of thing. And the Cass review, I think, is the opposite of that, where it really tries to be very strict about its conclusions. One of the other myths talked about, by the way, I read that many researchers and doctors asked to contribute to this and be interviewed or have give data refused because they're sort of just dedicated to this.
Yeah.
Cause, not to the examination of it, which seems like a real problem.
Yeah, particularly these are supposed to be people of science, you say.
And another myth sort of propagated about it is that there were fewer than 10 detransitioners out of the thousands of patients that they studied, when in fact those are the ones they found. It's impossible to determine because these clinics did not take care to follow the patients.
Right.
Which seems like a real basic thing.
Yeah, but it would hurt their narrative. You are making a comparison with COVID. And what's interesting, I think, is that, you know, people are saying, you know, we're going to look back on this time and realize the horror that we inflicted on our children. I don't doubt that. But what I would also add, though, is much like COVID, the people who are telling us now that this is all great, they're going to be then reporting in like the Times or wherever else and other mainstream outlets. These authors will say, you know, looking back, we tried our best and this is what we tried.
Oh, we're gonna...
And then after that, it's, you know, it was bad.
We're going to 100% now it can be told this one. Yes. Yeah. By the way, I saw a tweet this morning from Chloe Cole, who is a famous detransitioner and activist, and she has gone after Kaiser Permanente for medical malpractice. Yeah. Now, this is where the ish hits the fan in America. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't do it with a Cass review of the NHS, right? That's a very Brit style of going about things. You know how we do it? Medical malpractice lawsuits. And I do think that will cause action and reassessment quicker than other more research-based methods.
Yeah.
Also, just like anytime that kids are involved or medical treatment is involved, I would like good evidence because good evidence leads to better care.
Before we do this.
Why is that the enemy?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So that lawsuit is proceeding with discovery and it's probably going to be a doozy. Okay. Shall we move on?
All right.
What's next? The Hill?
The Hill? Yeah, you've been put. Yep.
I've been putting off the hill. You know it's bad when you're choosing to discuss gender politics instead of the hill.
Something like more upbeat, like gender like transgender issues than activism.
Yeah. Let's talk about that instead of the hill. Okay. On the hill, we have, let me just read the CNN piece. Yes, CNN. Okay, but the basics. Speaker Mike Johnson announced Wednesday he is sticking with his plan to put a series of foreign aid bills on the floor, including funding for Ukraine, after facing significant pressure from hardliners to not do that. After significant member feedback and discussion, the House Rules Committee will be posting soon today the text of three bills that will fund America's national security interests and allies in Israel, the Indo-Pacific, and Ukraine, including a loan structure for aid and enhanced strategy and accountability. Okay, it's sort of a complicated three-part process here where he's splitting them up, but he's splitting them up so that he can get enough hope, in his eyes, get enough support on individual ones. Because what happens is if you put Ukraine spending in, you lose right-leaning votes. If you put Israel spending in, you lose some left-leaning votes. It's a very closely divided house. Let me play for you Mike Johnson talking to Jake Tapper about his philosophy on this. And from the beginning of his speakership, he may have said different things before he was speaker, but from the beginning of his speakership, he's been talking about how this is a moral imperative.
Yeah.
And I also am sympathetic to people's concerns that particularly on Ukraine, the numbers have been so high and the manufacturing of military equipment in our country seems to not be as military industrial complexy as we had hoped it would be. So we do, like, there are concerns here that people see it as a preoccupation while we're not dealing with our own domestic issues. I understand that point of view. Let's hear his point of view on what they need to do.
So I understand what you're doing, breaking up these foreign aid packages, Ukraine, Taiwan, Israel, letting the House work its will, and then sending over to the Senate into one bill, whatever passes. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you do this months ago? I mean, Ukraine is desperate for aid.
Yeah, they are. Well, it takes a long time to socialize and build consensus when you have the smallest majority in U.S. history. So that's part of it. And it's very practical politics here. But also, we've had other big lifts in this Congress. As you know, we had to get the government appropriations bills done. And then we had to do the renewal of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and some pretty heavy measures. And it was a lot to handle at one time. Look,
let me just note, this guy's 100% losing his job because he sounds very sensible.
No, I was going to say, enjoy Mike Johnson while you have him here. He seems normal and there's no way he's going to survive this.
Exactly.
We mentioned on a previous show about initially it was Marjorie Taylor Greene who, sent up that motion to vacate the speakership. And now she is joined by Thomas Massie, another congressman. I want to know who they think can do this job and who can get all the votes of the Republicans and pass all the things they want to get passed.
Well, what their argument is, this is just as bad as Democrats anyway.
So we might as well have Hakeem
I don't know
Jeffries.
How you make that argument because you've got the oversight and you've got all sorts of subpoenaing you can do, even if you hate everything that's happening legislatively. Plus,
this is not 1995 for the Republicans.
The fact is that among voters, even if you break it down by districts, certainly safe districts for Republicans, there's broad support for foreign aid for these two Democratic countries.
For both. Yes. For both Ukraine and for Israel and also Taiwan.
Yeah.
So that aid, too. I mean, they need that. Everything that Mike Johnson said, I agree with. But there are a lot of people who don't, who feel like it's not our responsibility. NATO is outdated. The Cold War is over. They need to fend for themselves. And if you feel comfortable about having a rearmed Germany, maybe. Okay, fine. You know, Japan, of course, has done a complete 180 with its foreign policy because they know they feel like they can't rely on the United States to help them out, you know, even though they have some constitutional issues about their self-defense forces, as they call it. But they know what's going on in China. And so we just either have to wake up or we're going to, you know, ultimately pay a price. Their defense is our defense. You know, you can have it over there or we can have the problem over here.
It's a real thing that, and again, if you don't stand up for your allies, then all of these regimes get the message that no one's going to stand up to them.
Yeah.
That's the message. House Democrats, by the way, and this is the problem that Johnson deals with, are digesting Mike Johnson's four-part foreign aid, this is Politico reporting, and trying to decide whether they want to help him move it.
Right.
Because this has to be
their own motives.
A joint project. They've got their own issues. Rashida Tlaib stormed out of a Dem meeting over the Israel bill discussion, as you might imagine.
On brand.
So there's all sorts of moving parts here.
Yeah.
And you have to get them together very carefully because there is a very, very slim majority for Republicans. And that is one which there are people in the caucus and in the activist realm who think you should just hand away that majority because this is not going exactly how you want it to.
That's right.
I don't understand that. I know the people who believe this, and I don't understand it.
But when you're in the minority, you can say all sorts of things about how terrible things are. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Anyway, that is what's going on in the Hill. We should, to brighten the Hill for a moment, as always, let us bring in Senator John Fetterman with a you love to hear it. He tweets the pro-Palestinian protesters taking over a Starbucks in Ann Arbor, chanting, Starbucks, Starbucks, you can't hide, not till we free Palestine. First of all, that doesn't even rhyme. Do better. Senator John Fetterman, I don't know who needs to hear this, but blocking a bridge or berating folks in Starbucks isn't righteous. It just makes you an asshole. Demand Hamas to send every hostage back home and surrender. Man, this guy.
He's on fire. He really is, at least on these issues. Again, I want to say I'm not going to kid myself. And you know, we're not deluding ourselves here and saying, oh, my gosh, he's, you know, Ted Cruz or whoever on the right. Pick your example. But when it comes to this, he is unwavering.
Yeah.
I mentioned this to you, a protester come up to him. He was sitting on a park bench.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And asking about him valuing Israeli lives over Palestinian lives, and he just shook his head. It's like, I still support Israel. That's it. He wasn't even going to get into questions
like,
about
we're not
this
even
or
doing
that
this.
Or October 7th. No, he's just going to say flat out, that's my position. The Starbucks thing, I don't think Starbucks has a coffee shop in Gaza or, you know.
They need them to divest. Yeah. Divest. By the way,
Starbucks, Starbucks.
I was out to breakfast yesterday and took the toddlers out because I'm restaurant training them. You have to take them and put them in chairs and make them sit. And it's exhausting, but has to be done or else they can't exist as children in restaurants in the future.
Yes.
So I did that in the morning. I sat them outside far away and I saw somebody walking across the parking lot. And this is going to be really not helpful for an audio audience. And I'm sorry, but I'm just going to show Vic so that he can
react to YouTube.
And I thought I had a celebrity sighting.
That's pretty good.
There's like a 7-foot tall man in sweats.
Bald.
In sweats and a hoodie.
And I was a handlebar mustache.
He's here. It wasn't him. It was just one of my neighbors.
He doesn't look as good in shape. It's crazy to say this. As Fetterman. I don't know.
All right.
But he's freakishly tall.
So. I was for a second, I was excited. I was excited for my celeb sighting.
Him, yeah.
Okay. What else is going on?
Trump.
Oh, yes. Trump went to a bodega after court yesterday. By the way, did we talk about how the judge said he has to be in the court every single day?
Yeah, this is great because so Biden gets to do the campaigning. He has to be in court. And then eventually they'll put him in jail. And then it'll be great.
You know what? He's probably better off not being on the trail.
It's the same about blocking him on like social media and how the media are not sharing anything he says.
Right.
It's actually hurting the media and hurting the left that we're not being exposed to all the insanity. But I believe they're in the midst of jury selection, by the way, and I think they're up to 5 and they have 7 more to go.
This is a good time.
Yeah. Sonny, really quickly. Sunny Hostin just was on The View, and she actually said,
she has some thoughts.
Yeah, lie. Say that you love Trump, or lie. Don't tell them that you hate Trump so that you can get on the jury.
Former prosecutor, everybody. Yeah. Do you know what? I looked up her law degree. Know where she went?
Where?
I hate to do this to your friends.
No.
Notre Dame.
Oh, no. Really? Oh, I thought you were going to say Georgetown. That would have been much more believable. That's too bad.
Yeah. So Trump left the courtroom and went to a bodega yesterday, but not just any bodega. Wow. The Sana'a Convenience Store, a tiny bodega that sells chips, sodas, and other snacks, but it's most noted as the New York bodega where a man was stabbed to death by the owner of the bodega because the man was attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
The owner of the bodega was then charged in that case, unbelievably, even though it was on video what happened. Who was the prosecutor for that?
Oh, let me guess.
Alvin Bragg, the same man bringing charges against Trump. And this is a man, he is good at this particular thing, which is just like a lizard brain instinct for what plays in these, what hits the right note in this way, or this sort of like theatrical way.
Right.
So he goes to the bodega because Who was prosecuted here unfairly at this bodega?
Right.
A working class man of color?
Yeah. Again, right. You know, he's reinforcing these bonds that he has, as we know, from based on, you know, the voting demographics
right.
for him in 2016, 2020, and now going into 2024, that more working class voters side with Trump over Biden. And this just reinforces that.
He's also, by the way, this was Jose Alba.
That's
in
right.
2022, who was charged with this after he was attacked by 35-year-old Austin Simon. Alba, an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, was arrested and charged with murder. But the Manhattan district attorney dropped the charges within weeks, saying they could not prove Alba had not acted in self-defense. Now, we should note that, like, there was tremendous public pressure
yeah.
on them to drop the charges on
had
this.
There not been
had
that,
there not been
that. Had there not been a social media sort of campaign about, like, yeah. look at this and look at the video,
yeah,
they would have tried really hard to put this guy away.
Bragg's response to this, by the way, was that Alba's case was, quote, resolved nearly 2 years ago and the charges were dismissed after a thorough investigation, the statement said. D.A. Bragg's top priority remains combating violent crime, and the office has worked hand in hand with the NYPD to drive down overall crime in Manhattan. Fact check that one. Just recently, the guy who's been, there are many who've been sucker punching women in the face in New York City, and one of them punched a woman, broke her nose. Was arraigned or
right.
They could not keep him in jail.
Mm-hmm.
They let him out.
Right.
And he attacked a 9-year-old girl the next day at a train station. Punched her in the face. Like, is that your top priority, Alvin Bragg?
How many more punches does it take, assaults, before they finally put somebody away?
You know, I don't know what the punching statute mm-hmm. says in New York. What's the social justice restorative
right.
standard
well,
for
it,
number of punches it, one must take as a white woman in
well,
the city
like,
of
no,
New
it's
York,
like the NYPD,
or any woman,
the
really.
NYPD and the NYPD officer who was shot and killed, right?
Yeah.
And the person, the alleged assailant, had an arrest record of like 21 previous arrests or something
right.
to that effect. I guess it took 22. Okay, so he goes to the bodega.
Yeah, we should play video of that
cool.
too.
Yeah, let's do that.
Here's his reception. There's a huge crowd outside.
Yeah.
This is the thing that it is true. His uh-huh. his reception places is not always what members of the press expect it to be.
No.
Like here or the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta.
Flummoxes. Now.
Where a largely African-American yeah. staff greeted him politely and even
very
enthusiastically.
Excitedly. If you watch that video, everybody's excited to see him. It's partly a celebrity phenomenon, but the other part is right. that he really does connect with them and you know, it drives everybody crazy
well,
because he says, oh, I'm being attacked. You know, like they're coming after me. You know how it is when people come after you. And they're like, and here he is.
Well, and also beyond Trump, it's important to remember voters are more interesting, sometimes frustratingly
mm-hmm.
like of two minds at one time. But voters are more interesting than the people who cover them,
yeah.
give them credit for.
Yeah.
And so you do have to keep that in mind, and our press rarely does.
I was thinking, I wonder how many, you know, plants there were in that crowd to do these things. But I get the sense that a lot of this was actual, you know, New Yorkers who are just sick and tired of the way things are.
Well, and who knows?
Out,
like, yeah, like you said,
of,
there's
you know,
the celebrity part.
Yeah.
I would also say, I did say he has this capacity for the theatrical that's
yeah.
just innate to him.
Right.
However, sometimes it misfires, as we remember at the Four Seasons Landscaping Company.
That was like rock bottom.
That was
the
not
other people
a,
were at the Four Seasons Hotel. Giuliani was involved. That was a terrible thing.
That was not a great advance work moment. This
no.
one much better.
Yes.
This one much better.
Okay, I have a question for
yes.
you. The first question is, Trump goes into the bodega. Did he buy anything or did he just go in to say hi?
Let's find out.
Sorry.
Let me...
No, that's okay.
Getting Hammered Investigates.
Okay, we can find out on the next episode.
That's okay. a teaser.
Yeah, it's a teaser. Okay. We'll tell you if you bought anything. Second thing is, if you were Trump, if it was you, not you, you're Trump,
mm-hmm.
you're in his position. You go in to the bodega, you say hi.
Yeah.
Do you buy something? And if you buy something, what are you going to get?
If there are Utz cheese balls or Planters cheese balls, possibly. Also, I like puffed Cheetos.
Okay.
Not, I don't like the crunchy ones as much.
Uh-huh.
I like
yeah.
the Cheetos Puffs.
You're going to a convenience store, this is you're going to get.
Even better than the Cheetos Puffs, now discontinued, were the Cheetos Paws.
Yeah,
do you remember
paws.
The Cheetos Paws?
I do.
Those were...
It's getting too crazy.
Planters cheese balls flavor in a different shape, and they were fantastic. Haribo Classic gummy bears.
Oh, yes, of course. Sure,
and a vanilla Coke.
Wow.
Maybe a Reese's. Ooh, that's a lot.
That is a lot, but you know
but
what?
But those are just, I just covered all my favorites.
Yeah, no. You could hand them out to the crowd.
Oh, and sometimes
people
a Slim Jim.
Nuts. Thank you. I would go in and just get the Slim Jim.
I mean, that's
but
the healthy option.
But you ever see the really long ones? I know I was talking about big and wide just now, but now I'm talking about really long Slim Jims.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
I love
not
those.
Not like my Tabs.
I love those. Nice and smoky. Carcinogenic, by
okay.
the way.
Okay, no. Actually, I would argue that the jerky is the healthy choice.
Oh.
When I'm trying to be healthy, it's jerky or cashews or something, pistachios
oh, the cashews,
sometimes
yeah,
at
sure.
the gas station.
Yeah, the little bag.
And I once found at a gas station, dill pickle Slim Jims.
Oh.
And they were so amazing. Mm-hmm. And I have since tried to order them on Amazon unsuccessfully. And I have not found them
anymore. You're
going
to have to go back to that very same.
I don't know where I was. Uh-huh.
I will say this. Just
it's a Slim Jim in a haystack.
That's a great title for the show. I will say as a public service announcement for our listeners, I once got a beef jerky that was Carolina Reaper flavored. It
Ooh,
hurt me.
Be careful.
It hurt
yes,
me.
Yes.
And especially the next morning. Okay. Continue. Oh, while Biden does this, by the way, the next day.
Oh, the next day, Biden goes to a Sheetz.
Yeah.
Is that right? A Sheetz?
He was doing his U.S. Steel thing in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And so on his way back.
Pittsburgh area Sheetz.
Somebody said, I got a great idea.
You know, we don't have bodegas here, sir, but you got to go to the Sheetz.
You're going to go to Sheetz, as I say.
So he did that. He also talked about, I believe he told some nonsense stories about his union support and his life, as he often does. I thought Matt Welch of Reason had a great idea the other day because there's some debate about whether these guys should debate. And he said, I would love a debate where whoever the journalist is just tease up both of these old men to tell the most bullshit stories, made up stuff about their entire lives, self-aggrandizing, fake, outlandish. Imagine the character names. I mean, it's going to be good stuff.
Well, yeah. And Biden, by the way, so he goes in here, not as excitedly received. The vibe was not like this feverish sort of, oh my gosh, this
old man
buys
sandwich wasn't
and
doing
he's got
it for
the
everybody.
Sun, and he keeps on wearing those sunglasses. What's going on? I want to know what's going on with the eyes. Okay, that because it's not that bright inside the Sheetz, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is he told a story recently about his uncle who died in World War II,
right?
And it crashed somewhere in. I don't want to get the wrong island, if it was New Guinea or if it was one of these other islands out there in the Pacific. They never found the body. He suggested it was eaten by cannibals.
Okay.
The Department of Defense says it crashed in, they don't have any information on the cannibal thing.
Mr. Trump, a rebuttal on the cannibal
exactly.
story, please.
And I will say, okay.
You know what would happen? What would happen is Trump would start talking about whatever alleged cannibal story was happening in Haiti, and he would get it wrong. It would be totally offensive.
And that's why we have to go in there. The voodoo.
These are our two
the
options. These are our two options.
Yes. Okay. I have one quick question for you. Wawa versus Sheetz.
I think I'm a Sheetz gal, and I know that's going to make people upset.
That is terrible. That's a terrible take.
Although I did have a I had a delicious Wawa sandwich in the
it's
center
really good.
Of Philadelphia at like 4 a.m. after a Travis Manion Foundation gala that we were out late afterwards, and we all tumbled into the Wawa in our formal clothes.
Get a sandwich.
Formal clothes.
It's great. Yeah. Coffee and soup.
Okay, a couple quick things I want to note before we get to our closer.
Okay.
Number one, the University of Southern California, USC, canceled a commencement speech by its 2024 valedictorian, who has publicly supported Palestinians, citing security concerns, a rare decision that was praised by several pro-Israel groups and lambasted by free speech advocates and the country's largest Muslim civil rights organization. Okay, I'm against this.
Right.
Let her give the speech. She earned the slot. We don't even know what she's going to say, right?
Yeah.
Now,
I wouldn't be looking forward to it.
No, I don't think it's going to be great. And she did more than publicly support Palestinians. She liked and commented on various things that wanted to or advocated for the elimination of the entire state of Israel. So if you're for ethnic cleansing, yeah, maybe that is a line for some people, right? She was asked on CNN whether she does countenance the existence of Israel as a country. Mm-hmm. And she repeatedly dodged that question.
She dodged it. Yeah. She didn't say yes. She just dodged
she
it.
She dodged
because that would have been the easy
thing
to do.
To give it a yes or no would be unfair to the context of this discussion.
Wow.
Yeah. So look, she's probably going to give a terrible speech that will become terribler by virtue of all this attention that it's getting. However, she should be able to give the terrible speech because she earned the slot. The problem that campuses have is that they used to have valedictorians. The slot of valedictorian was self-selected as a, like, rational person with comportment who was looking to, like, observe the rules of play on the field.
Yeah.
Because that's what you incentivized in college. But now that's not what's incentivized. What's incentivized is more rhetoric like this. And I agree that it is sad for students who might want to have a unifying and not totally politicized message given to them by their valedictorian. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, if you get into policing the content of, the, of these speeches, that's not going to work out well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Who is your commencement speaker? Oh, you had a commencement speaker at University of Georgia. You don't remember? Not that she's a commencement speaker, but it got me thinking about
No.
Because you got to sit through all these things. You got the valedictorian speech. Our valedictorian, nobody knew who she was. No, I would say nobody knew who she was. I didn't know who she was. It's because she spent most of her time studying. It's just,
yes.
Good for her.
No, I think you should, honestly, as a valedictorian, you should give an anodyne, nice little speech about your good years at college. Yeah. That would be my advice.
Yeah.
But nobody's taken my advice. You know, Guy Benson's commencement speaker was Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, that
now that's a good one.
Yeah.
I believe the year after me was Zell Miller, and I would have showed up for
that
one.
Yeah.
I didn't actually go to my big graduation. I went to my department graduation and skipped my
separate.
Big one. Partly because, and I now regret it because I should have just done it. It's May or June in Georgia, and you're outside in a black robe on the football field.
Oh, yeah.
And that felt like I might not enjoy it that much.
And you might have been very hungover. It's senior week.
That's true. But you're out there on the field. Now I think, like, it would have been cool to be out on the field. I don't know why I made that decision at the time, but it wasn't very personal because it's such a large school. You just stand up and then you sit down in your department.
We did that. In Georgetown, they break it up by school. So at Foreign Service, ours was the King and Queen of Spain because their son was
monarchies.
Yes. Yeah, it was last time we have had monarchies there, maybe. And their son was a Georgetown student and he's currently the king.
Mm.
So.
Okay. Somewhere Meghan Markle is marking this down, like, get your kid into whatever university you want to be the commencement speaker.
That's right.
Okay. What else do I have?
Oh, Caitlin Clark.
Clark. Yeah, let me look up this dumb tweet from the president.
Oh, boy. Which one?
This is the one where, Caitlin Clark, best player in college women's basketball, arguably certainly in the discussion for GOAT when it comes to women's basketball. Joe Biden commented on her WNBA salary, which is low, right? WNBA salaries are not NBA salaries. There's a reason for that. The league in its entirety of its existence has not made a profit, okay? So people don't watch the games. The TV stations don't, or TV companies don't pay a lot of money to run the games because people don't watch them. People don't pay a lot of money to go to get tickets. Now, the market is shifting that because Caitlin Clark has become so popular that people are paying more to go to the games. The team that she's been drafted to is already seeing skyrocketing ticket prices.
The Indiana Fever.
The Indiana Fever. She's going to get tons of money in endorsement deals. So she'll have like a $70,000 salary, but she's going to have a gajillion dollar Nike contract. So the market is sort of sussing out where she should be. But you know, President Biden is no friend of the market.
No.
So President Biden chimes in on Twitter. Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now, we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. It's time that we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve. It's like so economically
Everybody
illiterate.
Makes the same.
You guys want to talk to the NBA about splitting their salaries with you?
Yeah.
When they get 400 times the viewership and revenue? It's just not how it works.
I will say I'm not a WNBA person, but I'm also not an NBA person. So college basketball, I enjoy watching.
I'm the same. I do not find either NBA alluring.
Yeah, I'm not going to help your ratings at all for anybody.
But I do enjoy that. Look, the storyline of Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark, the talk about the GOAT, the whole tournament was exciting. People were tuning in because it was good sports. Mm-hmm. It was good drama.
Yeah.
They liked it.
It was more exciting than the men's final. I get that.
Yeah.
The men's final, it wasn't that exciting. It's, you know, it's not exactly a great rivalry, right? This wasn't, you know, Duke-Kentucky or something, right? And to go back in time. And it's not hate watching where you want a team like Duke to lose if you're not from, you know, if you're not a Duke fan. So I can see why there'd be more excitement over Caitlin Clark because, you know, one of a kind player. Speaking of the hate watching, I can see, for example, being curious and possibly tuning in when they play, I think it's like the Phoenix Mercury, right?
Because right.
their player is Diana Taurasi, which I didn't know she was still playing.
Yeah.
And she's a big, I think, trash talker, but she's a hard fouler, right?
Yeah.
And so she's like, you better look out that Caitlin Clark guy. I'm going to show her, you know, that whole thing. All right, that's good. Well, I hope
there
Caitlin
was
Clark
some of that.
Wins.
Actually, I will say that got clipped a little bit. And it was a little unfairly mischaracterized.
Right.
I looked that one up because her full quote is more general about getting to a new level of play. And it's not exactly zeroing in on Caitlin Clark in the way that people read it to be. So let me give her that. I would like to say that the same Biden who says our daughters and how we need to look out for them is... These people are happy to have post-pubescent boys on women's competition
at the same time, while they're saying this. At the same time, please, let's have these guys compete against you because they identify as girls.
NBD.
So great.
Okay.
Great.
Last thing.
Yeah.
We're closing out with some good news.
Okay. Now, I'm giving you a choice here, Mary Catherine. You have an out because if you think
we're
that
doing
we,
church.
One or the other. Okay, we're going to do church. Okay.
We're doing church.
Yeah.
People are getting bonus time this week.
Yeah, this is. Right. Okay. You want me to talk about it? Okay,
going.
So this was a story in the Wall Street Journal about a new study showing that young people, teens, 20-somethings, who attend church are generally feeling happier and upbeat and self-fulfilled than those who do not.
Oh.
This isn't quite a revelation, I should say, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you did there.
Yes.
No, it's interesting because I think we are all wrestling with, I've referenced the Jonathan Haidt book, Anxious Generation.
Yes.
As I'm raising kids, I'm always thinking about how do I put them on the best possible path to be, I don't want their whole life's meaning just to be happy. I think struggle is important. That's not what I'm aiming for. But resilient, someone who can move through life and conquer new things and have some sort of sense of self that's larger than what their peers think about them. How do I do that?
Right.
One of the ways it seems clear to me as a parent, and it, I think is scientifically backed up in a lot of ways, is to have them invested in a faith.
Right. It is what you call this, like I've heard this mentioned several times now, that young people have this God-sized hole in their chest, right? And they need to fill it with something. What are they filling it with? Climate anxiety or transgenderism or whatever it is. And it becomes their religion.
It used to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll. How times have changed.
What's wrong with that? But it becomes their religion because they want something that has, you know, you have mantras and beliefs and rather than church. So going to church, finding one that suits you in regular attendance, all great things. So I'm going to say overall, it's a great trend that they're discovering faith. To be sure, it's great that they're coming back to church. On the other hand, going to sort of pick and choose what church you like based on things that you like doing in your life and people are going to tell you, hey, that's cool. Going to church is not about self-validation. I say this all the time. It's not about we want it to be that way. We want it to be, please tell me what I like doing.
I just want to enjoy myself, right.
And then feel good about yourself. And there, it's great when you leave church and you do feel good about yourself, but the whole feeling good, self-affirming, everything's great. That's like really just part of it. You know, I mean, it's really about the other, you know. And if you're this is why, like, you bring kids to church when they're small because it reminds them they're not the center of the universe. You know, like there's something else.
Well,
and everyone's focused on it.
By focusing on that and something larger, you end up with a sense of belonging. You end up with working towards goals that are outside yourself, doing volunteer work, all these things that come with
You're not thinking about yourself. Again, this is like an Abigail Schreier thing with bad therapy. Stop asking these kids how to feel your feelings.
Yes, and if this,
focus
if,
on other people
when
and
helping
them.
We talk about the therapy issue. We talk about dating problems. Yeah. Somebody tweeted the other day, like, maybe we should have a dating service where we go, like, on a day that we all have off to a central location where your community gathers and maybe there's some music and we sit next to each other. And maybe there's even like a like sort of a live self-help podcast that you listen to while you're there. It's church, right?
They're like so close. They're so close.
No, this is they were joking, but it is like what new agey people would reformulate and be like, well, that's just church.
And a lot of, I think a lot of young people, is at least within Catholic circles, are pushing back against 70s, 80s Catholicism, which was, you know, like Jesus Christ Superstar, let's all hold hands and feelings and the whole deal. And they're actually in search of solemnity and mystery, right? They want that. And it's like, you know, it'd be great if you all go back to church, but I can see going to a church, you know, for like if you were a lapsed Catholic, and then the service is kind of a dud, you know, which is a shame because something very important obviously happens at Mass. But if you have a priest, I'm not naming any names, but, you know, I remember we would go to Mass at this one place, and just before he says Mass is ended, and, you know, it's, you know, everything is still up there, everything is still happening, he interrupts it with, you have announcements, and then after that, the pastor will say, are there any birthdays today? Hey, happy birthday. Any birthdays this week? Anniversaries.
Right.
How many years? Hey, okay, do we have newcomers? Welcome. Where are you from? Look, okay, come on already. Let's just go, you know? I mean, just, you're killing me here. And it, let's, even worse, mm-hmm. even worse.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're not selling it, but go ahead.
No, that's what I'm saying. But there are other, okay, and I'll say even worse, there was mm-hmm. there's a priest, I don't look forward to, if he happens to be the priest when I go up to Jersey, and they have the big screens in the Mass, because it's a very large church, to help people. So they, I guess they don't have to spend money on the missalettes, right? So you just read everything on the screen. And then right before Mass is ended, and, you know, I like Mass to be like Cardinal Sara would say, you know, the power of silence, right? Solemnity. Right. He'll play like some joke YouTube video. And it's like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's
okay,
great.
Thanks.
He's getting very non-denominational.
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
that's like my kind
this
of church.
I'm horrified by this. And so, but if you find a great one, something's, you know, we'll go where we go now, our parish. We leave and I'll say, man, I wish so-and-so was here for that. They'd be back in. You know, but
let me say something.
So priests, get better at your job. That was
let me say
message.
Something mildly controversial, which is I think that Jesus Christ Superstar is great. and boy, can that Judas sing.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Thank you, Mary Catherine.
Jesus is also extremely soulful on that original recording.
Let me tell you, can I just say this? Another horrifying experience I had in the 1996 San Diego convention for the Republican convention. I went to a CNN party where Mark Russell, political satirist, piano player, he sang a tribute to Bernie Shaw to the tune of Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah. Bernie Shaw.
All right.
CNN. Okay.
That's very, got it. That's very stupid.
Right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Are we good? Oh, no, you got more thoughts? Are we good? Yes. That's going to be in your head.
We're not quite done.
Okay.
Because we're going to go. Are we going too long today? Enjoy, people.
Yeah, bonus material here.
It
helps me with my intermittent fast.
I want to play a quick clip of the winner of the Masters.
Oh,
golfer,
right.
Scottie Scheffler.
On that note,
Who was asked, he was asked once before the final day about what defines him. And he said, you know, my creator, I believe in Jesus and I'm out here playing. He gave me this talent. And I think that defines me more than anything. But then he's asked after he wins, he's wearing the green jacket. And I just want to play this because he gets very real about his faith.
Sean Martin.
You say constantly that your identity is not in your golf scores. What is it about winning and competing then that you find satisfying?
You know, that's a really good question. I was sitting around with my buddies this morning. I was a bit overwhelmed because I told them, I was like, I wish that I didn't want to win as badly as I did or as badly as I do. I think it would make the mornings easier. But I love winning. I hate losing. I really do. And when you're here in the biggest moments, when I'm sitting there with the lead on Sunday, I really, really want to win badly. And my buddies told me this morning, you know, my victory was secure on the cross. And that's a pretty special feeling to know that I'm secure for forever. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not I win this tournament or if I lose this tournament. You know, my identity is secure for forever.
Did the reporter then say, oh, which cross is this? This is who?
Can I look this up? Pass this on to the fact checker.
Well, that's great. Okay. Well, good.
We got a lot in.
That. Caitlin Clark, by the way, also went to Dowling Catholic. So, I mean, she comes from a Catholic family, Catholic school. The brothers, they all go there. I don't know. Listeners are wondering about this. I don't know if Dowling Catholic is named after Father Dowling. It remains a mystery. Thank you. Correction, correct correction. But you know, the Friday shows are always wacky.
That was
wacky.
The best joke ever on this show.
Friday shows are always wacky. Quick correction, and then we can wrap it up. Listener Chad Manley points out I was way off yet again with my Indiana geography when I said Indianapolis was down, you know, south, like along the Ohio River. That's Cincinnati. I was thinking, I've been to Cincinnati. No, it turns out it is literally smack dab in the middle, and it's like the county lines is like, it's like a square. It's crazy. It's really
in
the middle.
Yeah, that was really wrong now that you say that.
Yeah, way off. But I'm pretty sure it's still the capital, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we got that part right.
Okay, good. It's
okay,
not like,
moderately okay. Right and moderately reliable.
Oof. That wraps up, finally, this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and you can follow me on Twitter at Victorino Mattis.
I'm at MK Hammer. You can follow me on Twitter under that, or at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. You can follow the show at Getting Hammered Podcast on YouTube or Instagram, and you should. Thanks for getting hammered responsibly. We are done. This has been another With Media Podcast.